Court will proceed to the fourth case, Tindall v. Pulte Home Corporation.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is David Jeffrey Como, and I'm appearing on behalf of the plaintiff and appellant, Terry Tindall. As I'm sure the Court is well aware, this case was initially filed in the Circuit Court of Cook County as a personal injury case and was remanded to the District Court based upon diversity. After some discovery was undertaken, the defendants filed a motion for summary judgment, and it was based upon an assertion and position that the restatement of torts, Section 352, was applicable to the case and that the plaintiff's claim was defeated. Briefs were filed, and Judge Manning issued an opinion and memorandum as well as then an order following it. Of some trouble is that in the memorandum opinion and order, the case upon which the court relied, which was Hyder versus Lee Edwards, which is an Illinois case, is not a case that in any way, shape, or form deals with restatement of torts Section 352, nor the exception Section 353. It is a case that deals with, agency, plain and simple, and deals with whether or not an agent fails to disclose something if that can be imputed to the owner of the property who employed the agent. So it's very troubling from our perspective that the case upon which the court relied has absolutely nothing to do with the area of law that is addressed. Of further concern is that at the time of that opinion and order, the Illinois Supreme Court had, in fact, ruled on this very issue and these very sections of the restatement of torts in the Sparling case. We have cited that case because we believe that it is, in fact, controlling relative to this this incident and occurrence. Typically, I don't go through a rather elaborate or detailed recitation of the facts in an appellate argument, but I feel the need and the compulsion to do so here because I believe that the fact pattern, for want of the vernacular and excuse the language, just doesn't pass the smell test. What we have here, plain and simple, in terms of uncontroverted facts and evidence in the case, is that the defendant, Pulte Homes of Illinois, is a national home builder. They are expert in the area of land development and the building of homes. The plaintiffs, the Tindalls, were employees of the Postal Service and were prospective and then actual purchasers of a home. The home was valued at several hundred thousand dollars, which is what they paid for it. The transaction or the closing took place in December of 2003. Sometime within the month before that, for their particular lot, the sod was placed. In the couple, 2-3 months following, there's some testimony of February, some testimony of March, following the close of the home, the Tindalls began to notice holes appearing in their lot and their yard. Where they specifically noticed them at that time was the driveway had multiple holes. The front yard had multiple holes. They contacted the defendant builder, Pulte Homes, because their 3-month inspection was coming up. They had a 3-month and an 11-month that was part of the agreement, and they wanted to make sure that Pulte Homes was aware of all of the problems that they were noticing relative to their purchase. The Pulte representative came out, and they, Mrs. Tindall and this Ms. Gongola, had a discussion, and Ms. Tindall pointed out the holes and said, you know, this is a problem, why are these occurring, all of those kinds of things. And most notably, again, admitted by the defense, is that Ms. Gongola said, don't worry about it. It's normal settling. It's normal. We'll take care of them. What's also undisputed is that shortly thereafter, some, but not all, in a rather piecemeal fashion, the defendant did, in fact, take care of some of these holes that appeared, most notably the ones in the driveway, wherein they said that they were ultimately going to repave or put a second coat on anyway, so it wasn't quite done. But they didn't take care of a hole next to the driveway, which was rather large in description. We also know by uncontroverted evidence that the neighbors to the west of the Tyndalls, the Ronas, W-R-O-N-A, Mr. Rona was a guy that liked to work in his yard, liked to do things personally himself, mowed his lawn in the spring of 2004, didn't notice anything, but then when he came back to mow it a second time on a later date, shorter, noticed a large hole in his lot.
What if Mr. Tyndall had fallen 2 years after he closed on this house?
I'm sorry?
What if he had, instead of falling in July of 04, he had fallen in December of 05? So it's 2 years after.
I think two potential arguments could be made. The first of which, under the Restatement 353, still the elements would apply. As to whether or not it existed at the time of the occurrence, whether the defendants knew or should have known about it, whether they didn't disclose it, whether they knew or should have known that the Tyndalls wouldn't discover it in that time. But most notably in all the cases that were cited, it's a question of fact as to whether or not a sufficient time had elapsed after closing.
Yeah, so that's why I'm asking you, what's the sufficient time?
Well,
here the fall is 7 months after the transfer of ownership, transfer of title.
Right.
So I'm saying, what if it was 2 years? Would that be?
I don't know that there's a cut, clear answer to that, because I think, as the court's pointed out, that's a question of fact.
But there's 10 years.
Obviously, the longer one goes out, the more logical it becomes that there was sufficient time under the question of fact analysis for the vendee to have discovered it. I mean, I think that makes common sense. But if it's 10 years, then obviously that there would be a strong argument made that there was plenty of time for the vendees to have discovered that. But the other issue is that within this 3 month and 11 month inspection time period, the 7 months certainly fell within that. And what is important, I believe, is that the defendants in this case, either by analysis of voluntary undertaking or because their interpretation of their responsibilities under the contract called for them to have a continuing obligation to repair and maintain the ground conditions. They came out and did it. They then said, well, why don't you put flags around there so we know when our people are around here that they can come and take care of these holes. They didn't ever investigate what was causing it, and they didn't ever do anything other than piecemeal and not even across the board fix them all at the same time. They did some and then came back to do others later on. So I think that there's a responsibility there that's acknowledged in the facts of the case by the defense. But the hole in the Rona's yard, as I was discussing earlier, was large enough that, as he described it, a 40-pound bag of topsoil had to be put into it. We're not talking about little bitty indentations here. The hole that Mr. Tyndall stepped into and fell was large enough. He's about 6'4 or 6'5. He's got, I think, a size 12 or 13 foot. It went into this hole up to the mid-calf, and his body went forward. This is not a little bitty indentation. This is a substantial, significant hole, much like the one that Mr. Rona noticed and observed on his property. We also know, without dispute, that there was a separate home, Holly Anderson, that had a tree collapse that was attributed by the defense to an underground pipe leaking, and it caused erosion and things happened. But what we know here relative to the Tyndalls is, in fact, there were multiple holes. There was a problem here. There was a continuing action by the defense, the defendant in the case, to fix, but didn't do so in the proper way. They came out and threw a little dirt in a couple of the holes. That was basically all they did. And then once they found out about Mr. Tyndall's horrible injury, then they came out and filled in some more and did some other things, and that's when they started with this, put the flags out and we'll come around and take care of them. There's something wrong when somebody buys a new house and there is a hole large enough for a person that size to step into underneath the sod. There's no evidence that the plaintiffs caused it. There's no evidence that their dog caused it. That was raised in some of the briefs. Literally, one would have to roll back the sod, dig the hole, and roll the sod back.
They have to know that there's this particular piece of sod problem, or that there's a general problem with the sod. And I imagine this is a suburban area where there's a lot of sod.
It is. And thank you, Your Honor, for the question, because our position is that the defense has been pretty creative in having the court isolate on this particular hole. We don't think that's the issue. The issue is the ground conditions. There were multiple holes popping up all over the place under a variety of circumstances. Something was wrong in that soil. So based upon that, we believe that the court misapplied the law, and we respectfully request that the summary judgment be reversed. Thank you.
Ms. Shank?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Kristen Shank. I represent Pulte Home Corporation, incorrectly sued as Pulte Home Corporation and Pulte Home Corporation, Illinois Division. The case before you now is one of conditions and exceptions. Tyndall, for the first time today, has finally acknowledged that that this case is controlled by the principles outlined in Restatement 352 and 353 of the Restatement Second of Torts. However, Tyndall keeps trying to argue and force the Rule 353 exceptions into some sort of a negligence analysis with terms like duty, breach, and proximate cause, and some continuing obligation. Illinois law does not recognize negligence liability against a vendor of property like Pulte for an injury caused by a condition on the property at the time of transfer. Rather, Illinois law adheres to the general rule of non-liability as outlined in Section 352 of the Restatement of Torts. A seller of property is not liable for the condition on the property after the buyer takes possession. Further, Illinois has adopted the exception carved out by Section 353 of the Restatement Second of Torts. That exception not only takes into account the knowledge and action of vendors like Pulte, but also considers the knowledge and actions of vendees like Tyndall. Under Illinois law, to succeed on a claim against Pulte, Tyndall must prove all five elements of the exception. Now, plaintiff's counsel actually pointed out the case of Hyder versus Lee, which was cited in our brief and cited by the court below. And yes, Pulte will admit most of the case deals with agency law, but what Hyder did do is it separated bit by bit the five individual elements that make up the 353 exception. It's probably the best example in Illinois courts at this time of the division and of those elements. And Tyndall must show, number one of those elements, that Pulte concealed or failed to disclose a condition on Tyndall's property prior to sale that created an unreasonable risk to persons on the land. Number two, that Pulte knew or had reason to know of that condition and realized or should have realized that risk, that there was risk involved. Number three, that Pulte had reason to believe that Tyndall would not discover that condition. Number four, that the condition caused physical harm after Tyndall took possession, but before he knew or had reason to know of the condition and the risk. And number five, that the condition caused physical harm before Tyndall had an opportunity to take precautions against injury. So, to defeat Pulte's motion for summary judgment, Tyndall must show that a question of material fact exists to each of the five elements of the Section 353 exception. Tyndall fell short in the district court, and Tyndall's appeal falls short again. I would like to point out that in the lower court, which was not appealed here, that Tyndall's argument that there was some continuing duty on behalf of Pulte, that was ruled upon by the lower court, and it was ruled that Tyndall had no continuing, that Pulte had no continuing obligation. So to continue, Tyndall's argument centers on what Pulte knew or should have known, addressing only three of the five elements required in the exception. Further, Tyndall fails to raise material questions of fact for one, if not all, of those elements. Moreover, much of the evidence and facts relied upon by Tyndall to raise questions of fact are made up of inadmissible hearsay and mischaracterized evidence, none of which lead to a reasonable and justifiable inference in favor of Tyndall. Here, Tyndall cannot avail himself of the 353 exception and cannot defeat Pulte's motion. First, his argument fails because he does not even address the fourth and fifth elements of the exception, dealing with his own action and knowledge. Rather, he focuses on what he believes is Pulte's constructive knowledge, essentially the first three elements of the exception. By failing to address all five elements, Tyndall cannot win as a matter of law. The fourth and fifth elements, as I'll go over again, of the exception require that the condition caused physical harm before Tyndall had reason to know of it, and before Tyndall could take precautions against that harm. In this case, Tyndall ignores the issue of his own discovery and knowledge of the holes developing on his property. His wife fell into those holes. At that point in time, Tyndall very easily could have taken time and walked around his own property. The cases of Regis versus Associated Radiologist and Swisher versus Jeans both talk about plaintiffs who had discovered conditions on their own property shortly after closing, at which they were put, the plaintiffs were therefore put on notice to take.
I understand your argument about these latter two elements of the restatement, but going just to the actual knowledge element.
Sure.
Is it your opinion that knowledge of the vendor would have to be to the specific hole on this property where he fell, or that there was a general problem with the sod on the lawn and holes would?
I would generally say that it should be to the particular condition, but in this case it is an overall soil condition. And here in this instance, whether or not Pulte knew of a condition, the evidence shows that in the years leading up from 1997 through the closing in 2003, testing, soil testing done where Mr. Tyndall's home eventually ended up, and then testing, compaction testing and load-bearing testing, that was all performed on Mr. Tyndall's lot just up to the time of that his house was built, all showed that the soil, as far as Pulte knew, met all standards.
Well, but his house was different than most of the other houses in the subdivision, wasn't it? In a lower area where more sinkholes would be.
Well, actually, his area was in a section that was developed over. It was in a lower section, but it was not in a section where, as Mr. Tyndall has implied, with wetlands. There's no testimony, and in fact, the Lake County grading witness stated that the wetlands in the area were actually elsewhere and away from Mr. Tyndall's property. But Mr. Tyndall's property was on a graded elevation, lower graded elevation compared to other areas of the development.
So then in answer to my question, either yes or no, is it your position that the actual knowledge requirement in the restatement would require actual knowledge of the particular hole that Tyndall fell in, and not just a general national knowledge, but general problem with sinkholes on the property?
No, I would not think in this instance it would be that there was some kind of soil condition in existence on Mr. Tyndall's property.
All right.
And to continue on, the second part relating to Mr. Tyndall's knowledge, The 353 exception essentially presupposes that, in answer to your question, presupposes that there was a soil condition. And in this instance, there's no evidence that there was a soil condition at the time of closing. There has to have been some kind of soil condition for Pulte to have known about or had reason to know about at the time of closing.
So it all occurred after that phone?
Well, as far as we know, the development of holes occurred after closing on Mr. Tyndall's property, as well as evidence related to the examples that Mr. Tyndall gave of Ms. Holly Anderson. The hole on her property actually was pretty insular in that instance because it was a model home that had been built for this development, and it had a sprinkler system, and there was a tree root that ended up interfering with the sprinkler system, causing a hole. And again, that occurred after Mr. Tyndall took possession of his property. And again, holes that he's claiming on Mr. Rona's property, again, also occurred after Mr. Tyndall took possession of his property. And that's the key fact. That's the key issue here. Did Pulte have reason to know that a condition existed at the time of transfer? And relating to some other evidence that that Tyndall brings up is the issue of Mr. Rona's testimony. Mr. Tyndall never actually produces testimony from Mr. Rona in his in any of his briefs, and simply relies on the testimony of his wife, Mrs. Tyndall, which is inadmissible hearsay. And if Mr. Rona actually did state this, why didn't Mr. Tyndall produce this evidence prior to the hearing today? So in conclusion, Tyndall has offered no evidence to suggest that any of these soil condition problems existed at the time of closing, whereby Pulte was put on notice of a condition on Tyndall's property. These facts do not lead to the logical inference and conclusion that a pervasive soil condition existed at the time of closing. Tyndall's appeal fails because he does not address all five elements of the exception and because he does not present competent evidence to raise questions of fact as to all five elements. Therefore, we ask this court to affirm the lower court's granting of summary judgment in Pulte's favor.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. Ms. Como, your time had expired, but I'm going to give you an additional minute for rebuttal.
Thank you. I'll be very brief, and I appreciate the indulgence. First and foremost, I invite the court to read the Heider case. I'm sure you have. It does not set forth five factors under 353 or 352. It doesn't even deal with it. It deals with nothing but agency. Mr. Rona's testimony was part of the record at the trial level. He testified directly, this is what I saw, this is what I did, so it's not impermissible hearsay in any way, shape, or form. The court applied the wrong law in analyzing the facts. The reasonable inferences from the facts were to be in favor of the non-movement, which is the plaintiff, which is the basis for us asking this court to look at the opinion and decision of Judge Manning and to reverse the appeal and let a jury decide these facts. Thank you very much.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.